All right, Reg, are we ready for a little podcasting today? Thumbs up from you? Good. Thumbs up from me. So that's all we need. Pilot and co-pilot, what do you say? Let's take this bird for a spin. What do you say? Okay. All right. Put it in the books. Episode 295. 295. Five more until the big 500. We'll see what happens with that. All right, free friend, are you ready? Get the trigger finger ready, and I will give you the three S's, star, smile, strong, and I will give you a podcast. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there, of course. It's always important to listen to the podcast, but, you know, it's also just as important, not equal, but close, very close, to get out there and spread the word about the podcast. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs, too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the prompt for the podcast section, go to the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find podcast after podcast after podcast after podcast. Load more, scroll down, load more, scroll down, rinse and repeat. We've got tons of podcasts in there for your entertainment and information pleasure, and you can always go there to find out where we've been so you know where we're going. And we're still going strong here. This is episode 495. 495. Boy, 5 weeks from now, the big 100. 5 weeks from now. So that probably puts us into sometime in December. And a few people have asked, well, what are you going to do for the 500th episode? And yeah, it's a big number. There's no question about that. Been doing this for 10 years now, almost. May of 2016 will be 10 years, 500 podcasts by the end of this year. But, you know, I'm debating whether to make a big to-do about it or just say, here's a podcast. I've said this many times, and I will repeat it. One of the things that I always admired about Walter Payton, the Chicago Bears Hall of Fame running back, was that he, in especially during his era, in the mid 70s and into the 80s, that's when the end zone celebrations and the end zone dances and all that. Now it's choreographed. It's like a Broadway musical. Somebody scores a touchdown, but before it started very organically. And so suddenly, you know, a few players here and there and certain teams would start doing these dances or doing these big celebrations. Before, the biggest celebration of a touchdown was to spike the ball. Like, hey, I got here. You know, it's like we just went down 90 yards. So we got here. It's almost like climbing Mount Everest and you would spike the ball with a lot of gusto. But then all of a sudden, the 60s and 70s, when television became more prominent and people started to, wanted to create more of an image for themselves. And everybody started to do these individual dances and celebrations and blah, blah, blah. And it was right in the heart of Walter Payton's career when that started and really blossomed. But he never did it. He spiked the ball every once in a while, but that was kind of a traditional football thing. For the most part, he scored a touchdown, and he scored many, 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 many touchdowns. And he would just flip the ball to the referee. And after a while, the reporters would ask, well, you know, Walter, why do you just flip the ball to the referee? Everybody else is doing a dance. And, you know, his name was Sweetness. You know, he liked to groove and dance. You'd see him. He owned a lot of dance clubs and nightclubs. So he certainly wasn't like he couldn't dance. But he said, but on the field, he was a football player. And he said, you know, when I score a touchdown, I want to make it like I'm coming back for another one. So there's no real reason to be celebrating. Those other guys, when they celebrate like that, it's almost like they don't feel like they're ever going to go back there again. So they want to make the most of it. But I'm going back to that end zone. So Just act like you've been there before and keep going. And I sort of like that philosophy. And so, yeah, 500 might be a big to-do, but it might be just, hey, it's 500 and onward. We'll see. But right now, we're in 495, so we still got some time to think about. But I wanted to talk about today. It was kind of interesting. If you're a pet owner, you may be able to relate to this, certainly, if it's ever happened to you. I've spoken many times on the podcast. My wife and I have had two cats during our time together. I never had a pet when I was at home. I shouldn't say that. I had a couple of birds. Actually, we had a cat when I was a real little kid. We had a cat, but I don't know if we had a cat or not. You know, I was very young. This cat used to come around our house. I know that we used to let him out. He was like an alley cat. Back in those days, you just saw these stray cats and people would kind of, I don't know if we ever brought him in the house actually, or we just fed him, he'd come by. I don't remember. It was almost like we were just kind of taking care of him while he was out there. I was very little. I remember the cat's name was Taffy. It was a tabby cat. And but I was very young, so I'm not sure if I know we didn't have any kitty litter in the house. I don't remember that. So I don't know what the story was, but I do remember Taffy the cat. And Taffy used to get in some fights. She'd come back in the middle of the night, you know, the next day, and you could see that, you know, she had some fights. Or it was, well, we found out it was a boy. First, they thought it was a girl. I don't even know if they took the cat to the vet or anything. Like I said, I don't think we really brought the cat in the house. But yeah, Tuffy, then we called him Tuffy. First, it was Taffy when we thought it was a girl. Then we found out it was a boy and it was Tuffy. And he was Tuffy. You could see that he got in a few scrapes. And then one day he just didn't come back. But I was very young, and so I don't remember the whole thing. As I said, my parents weren't big on pets, and so we didn't have like a dog or a cat in the house and things like that. But my wife and I have had two cats since we've been married. And the first cat was Thames, and she lived to be about 17 years old. And our current cat is Grimsby, and we've had her now for 11 years. In fact, this month we had her, it was an 11-month our 11-year anniversary that we've had her, and she's just as lovable and quirky as every other cat would be, and she's certainly a part of the family, and she's, you know, she just makes us laugh, and we just enjoy being with her, just as we did with Thames, and so I think we think that she's 14 years old. We got her from a shelter. And it's hard to tell how old cats are. A lot of times you can tell by the teeth. So they thought at the time that she was about 3 or 4 years old. She's probably between, 14 and 15 years old. But we've had her for 11 years, just in November. November 1st, in fact, was the day that that I saw her. We went to look for we were kind of casually going looking for cats. It had been about 2.5 years since Tim passed away, and so we were like, well, maybe it's time again. We sort of were able to, get over the loss of Thames, and she was a very special cat, a very special part of our little family. And so after a couple of years, we said, well, maybe it's time now. And we were looking, and, in our view, Thames was a pretty tough cat to live up to. So we just weren't grabbing any cat, and we wanted to make sure that we connected with the cat, and we wanted to, make sure that we felt, there was a mutual kind of, if there can be, right? I mean, especially in that case. But my point is we just didn't go in and say, well, just take that one. So we were very selective because, like I said, our memories of Thames were still strong. And, that always stays in your mind for the next pet that you have. And a lot of times, inevitably, you will, compare the two. At least initially. And then you just realize that like people, everybody's different and every pet is different. And you just have to adjust. You can't expect this pet, Even if it's the same kind, whether it's a dog or a cat, you can't expect this one to act the same way the other one did. You may have had special games, or you may have done this, you may have done that, you may have pet them there, or whatever it was, and that cat loved it. And this cat doesn't find that interesting at all, but finds something else interesting. So then, you know, over time, you acclimate, and then you start to appreciate that cat's likes and dislikes. And that's the way any relationship is, right? And so we were, like I said, we were very picky. And it took us, we just didn't go out one Saturday and get a cat. We were traveling to different shelters, and it was a good 2, 3, 4 weeks that we were doing this, and even wondering at one time, are we ever going to do this? Is it ever going to happen? And then we went to this shelter, and we walked in, and I may have told this story before, but we walked in, and I was at one corner where the door was, and now Grimsby was in the far corner, way in the back, in a cage. And she just had these beautiful markings, black on one side, brown on the other. I think they call the kind of cat she is a tortie. But she had these big blue eyes that just like, whoa. And we, you know, Thames was a calico, so we were looking for maybe a completely different color cat, not with black or not with the same kind of markings. Thames kind of had a two-color face as well, with a black eye on one side and kind of a white and light brown on the other. And so we were thinking just to, let's get, you know, if you get a new cat, we'll get a new one that has a completely different look, so, you know, it won't look, remind us of Thames, and this way we can, you know, just, you know, appreciate the new cat for what she is and or he is, and, you know, and try to get something completely different. And yet here we were again with this kind of multi-faced and, you know, markings of a cat. Not as Grimsby doesn't have as much white as Thames did. Like I said, Thames was a calico. But Grimsby has like the light brown and the black. And she's got white paws, though. She's got some really nice, beautiful cat. Everybody who sees her just goes, oh, my God. And that's what happened to me. My wife didn't even really see her. But as soon as we walked in the door, I just saw her eyes. And I just went right over there. My wife was going to other cages and playing with the cats. And you know, once again, seeing if there's any kind of connection there. And I went over to the cage where Grimsby was, and we named Grimsby. Her name wasn't Grimsby at the time. I think it was Lola, actually. I don't know where that came from, but we changed it, obviously. And so Grimsby just, I put my hand in the cage, and she put her face up, and just, you know, I started rubbing the top of her head, and she was just like, totally. I was like, oh my God. I mean, what a connection here, you know. And so my wife saw that I, you know, my wife was going from cage to cage, and I was just sitting at this one cage. I was first attracted by her blue eyes, and then we, you know, she just kept rubbing up against me and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and she, my wife says, what are you doing over there? And I said, I think I'm falling in love with a cat and vice versa. And so then my wife saw her, and she was like, oh, wow. And she started doing the same thing with my wife, and, we walked out of the place, not taking her, because we still weren't sure. You know, we were still kind of gun-shy. And as we walked out of the door, my wife said, wow, I thought you really want to get that cat. And she says, you don't like that cat? And I said, I love that cat. And she says, well, then why aren't we getting her? And we just kind of looked at each other and walked back in the shelter and said, yeah, we'll take her before anybody else does, because, you know, you never know. You know, they don't put holds on cats, you know, or any, you know, animals at shelters. It's first come, first serve, because they want to adopt out as many as they can to give these animals, you know, a good home. And so we decided to get her, and we went there the next day to actually pick her up. But it was November 1st is when we first saw her. So as I said, we've had her now for 11 years. It was 2011. But, so yeah, we've you know, we've had a very fun time with her, and she's, like I said, definitely a part of the family. And and as much as you can, you know, kind of you know, who have you have these little moments and these connections with, and dogs are certainly a different breed, no pun intended. I mean, you know, dogs really create connections, and cats are a different breed. Once again, I'm not trying to make puns here, but you know, so you have to be a little more careful and navigate, and you know, cats, you know, will show affection, but it's on their own terms. But at the same time, they do seek it out. It's not constant like a dog or some other kind of pets, but cats are affectionate. And I know a lot of people, especially if you're not a cat person, you say, oh, well, cats just sit in the corner. And, you know, if I'm going to get a pet, I want a pet that's around me and interacts with me. And I understand that. But at the same time, what's nice about a cat is that you both the owner and the cat, can decide. You know, a lot of times, a lot of pets, especially dogs, sometimes they always need that. Some dogs need constant attention. So after a while, oh, geez, enough already. And so what I like about a cat is that, first of all, they're very self-sufficient. I mean, I know some friends that go through a lot of training and you know, just to make sure that the dogs, you know, go to the bathroom and and how they behave. And, you know, cats are very self-sufficient. And so I like that. I certainly am very diligent in terms of feedings and, you know, cleaning out the litter boxes and things like that. But I like the fact that they're kind of independent and they don't need constant 24-hour attention or 24-hour maintenance. So that is very in tune with my likings and our lifestyle. You know, we can leave and go out for several hours and she's got her food and she's got her litter box and so she's fine. And so a cat is a very, for our lifestyle, a cat is a perfect kind of pet. And so as much as you have a connection with your pet in any way, you know, you always kind of wonder, you know, what are they thinking? What are they, especially cats? Cats are a great mystery. Dogs, you know, I don't seem to be as complicated. They show their intentions and they show their feelings and they show their emotions or they whatever those are that they have, if they indeed are the same as kind of on a human basis. But cats are a little more guarded. They're always kind of looking around and a little suspicious. That's just their nature. You know, that's where they, you know, their upbringing, they're taught to be careful. And Grimsby certainly is like that. She's a little more, you know, but she's very nice with people, but she's guarded a little more than Thames was. We got Thames when she was a kitten. You know, like I said, Grimsby was about 2 or 3 years old, so I'm not sure what her history was or, you know, who had her before or what. They said that she was found in a parking lot, and that might be the case. But at the same time, she was spayed, so somebody had her. She wasn't just a wild cat or a feral cat. She was obviously in a home somewhere at one time because someone had her spayed. But who knows if it was the person who brought her into the shelter or a person who found her after that. We don't know. There's no way of knowing. The person who found her said he found her in a parking lot. So, you know, you have to go by that. Who knows? So obviously she may have been outside for a while. Who knows? You know, we don't really know. But we had Thames when she was like very young, like a kitten. And so we were always around her paying attention. And so she developed, you know, whatever instincts she had, they're obviously in her. But at the same time, I think that she grew up with us. And so we were always picking her up and being affectionate and paying attention to her and things like that. And so she was a little, her temperament was much different. Grimsby is a great cat. She comes down and with people, she's, you know, bouncing around, but she doesn't stay long. You know, she's like, oh, hello, look at me. And you, I know you're going to say I'm pretty. and then she just sort of goes off on her own, you know. So like I said, two different, you know, two cats, totally different, personalities, and you just accept that. But you always often wonder, like, so what are they thinking? You know, and you've got this kind of relationship with your pet, and you talk to them, and they respond, or sometimes they don't, especially a cat. Once again, I mean, I'm speaking just from a cat standpoint. But the great frustration, I'm sure, that every pet owner, whether you have a dog or a cat or a chicken or whatever you have, is that there's always going to be a breakdown in true communication. You can't tell them exactly what's going on. They might know that something different is going on, but they don't know what's going on here or what's going on there. When you're going out or you're going someplace, or especially if you take them to the doctor, or in a trip, or you take them to, for somebody to watch them, it's like, you want to, all of a sudden they're very, any kind of pet seems to be very routine based. And when you break that routine, you could just see that there's like some uneasiness, and cats are certainly very routine based. And so when they are out of their element or out of their routine, a lot of times they will react in a way, because it's like, okay, this isn't the way that we usually do things here. But as I said, Grimsby is very adaptable. And so, like I said, we don't know what her background is, but I know that before, when we picked her up at the shelter, when we found her, they said that for a while she was being, I guess she was probably brought in about a month and a half before that we adopted her. And so she was actually being fostered by some people. There were people take care of a pet in their home for a while, maybe when they first come in, then they take them to the shelter. So, she obviously was around people and things like that. But like I said, you always wonder, what... how much do they really understand? And so it's always kind of a frustration, because you have this relationship, but then there's just certain black spaces that you can't convey. You certainly can convey affection or love or attention or things like that, but obviously you can't verbally communicate. I mean, Grimsby lets us know what she wants, which is going to be part of what I'm talking about, the main part of this. She will let you know. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but cats don't really meow to each other. The meowing thing is more of a verbal reaction to us. Cats do not meow at each other. They may, hiss or snarl or things like that, like dogs would bark, but cats don't really meow at each other. But they do meow at people. So it's almost kind of a reaction to us talking. They're trying to relate to us in some way and let us know what they're doing or what they want, or if they're in trouble or something like that. So there is some kind of deliberate communication that cats have developed with humans, because among cats themselves, they don't meow. They may do some other sounds and some other gestures, and they certainly communicate with each other in nonverbal ways or in some audio ways. But in terms of that meow, that's, from what I understand, is fairly and primarily in connection with humans. So that's an interesting kind of dynamic. And so, as I said, she lets us know. If she's hungry, she'll meow, or she'll come over and, she'll knock something. Not in a bad way, just like sort of like, hey, look at me. I want some attention here. And usually that attention is because I'm hungry or something else is going on. We've once again, as I said before, you begin to learn that specific pet's way of communicating what they are wanting or needing, and you interpret them. Now, Thames never did that. She never, used to knock little, and like I said, she's not knocking anything over that can break. I mean, she doesn't know that, but she usually just moves some stuff, just like with her paws and stuff like that, just to say, hey, look at me, pay attention to me, and I'm hungry. Or, maybe I threw up over there. You might want to go over there, take a look. You might want to clean that up, because I'm not cleaning it up. But whatever it might be. And we've been very happy. We've been very lucky in that I've had her for 11 years. She has really been a very healthy cat. So we haven't had to really deal with any kind of, ailments or pain. She's never really been in any major pain. I mean, she's had some teeth pulled over the years. But, they give you, obviously do anesthetics and things like that. But in terms of any kind of like ailments, we've been very fortunate with her. And she hasn't had to have any like major kind of procedures or anything with a doctor. I mean, she's always a little skittish when she goes to the vet, but then she's always very nice. And they always, everybody at the vet's always, oh my God, she's so beautiful. She's so pretty. She's so nice. Like I said, she knows how to curry favor. That's how she got into our house. She probably realized that's the guy I got to convince. The woman over there will be easier, but I got to convince this guy because, he might be the tougher nut. And so when she just started to, react to me when I saw her in the shelter, she knew what she was doing. Now, the funny thing is, while she was very affectionate with me, and even when we brought her home, we'd hold her and she was always very affectionate. But over time, she's clearly closer with my wife. Even though I feed her most of the time, I change her litter, I buy her food, but she's just become more of a companion with my wife. I don't know, once again, we don't know her background. And she seems to be just a little intimidated by men. And I don't know if it's the deep voice or just, the physicality. She will come by me, but not as, she doesn't come first to me. She goes to my wife. She'll sit with my wife. Thames, as I said, we raised her pretty much from kitten. So she was as affectionate with each of us. Sometimes she'd come and cuddle with me. Sometimes she'd go with my wife, but she was very comfortable with both of us. Whereas Grimsby seems to be a little more attuned to my wife. So, and I don't know if it's just, as I said, I don't know what happened in her past. If there was something about a male that scared her or something, but that's fine. Like I said, you come to accept that stuff, and you just realize, and this is okay. This is our relationship. But she's still affectionate with me. There's no question. She'll come by. She gives me some time. But she certainly goes. She's certainly more of my wife's companion than she is either mine or both of ours. She will always go to my wife first. And once again, so that was an adjustment for me because, as I said, Thames was very affectionate, and she would come to me, follow me, or jump on me, or we'd sleep together. I've never really slept with Grimsby. In fact, I tried to when we first got her. We kept her just in one room, so she would get little, for about a week or so, and I actually slept with her. I was in the room with her, and I slept with her, trying to create that kind of bond. And it happened for a while, but then naturally she just seemed to go more toward my wife. So like I said, you can't be upset. It's disappointing to some extent, but then you just acclimate and you realize, okay, this is our relationship. And then you come to appreciate whatever those, moments are that you have and the way that you get together. And she, don't get me wrong, I mean, she lets me pet her and pick her up and things like that. And I, and she follows me around. And once I get, when she's hungry, she comes to me. She knows that I'll get up and get her the food. She knows where to go when she's hungry. So we have that kind of a connection. I'm not saying that she doesn't like me. It's just that she will go to my wife first. She will sit by my wife and sit in her lap. She'll come by me for a while and let me pet her, but then she'll get up. She won't stay there for, Thames used to sit there for hours.
you know, just in between my legs on the blanket or on the floor, and I'd actually lay on her stomach with my head. I mean, we had a very close relationship. So it's certainly different with Grimsby, but that's fine. As I said before, that's the way you, you know, that's the way you do it. What I really wanted to discuss was, so we've been very fortunate in that she has really not had any kind of major, you know, ailments. And so we went to the vet recently for her annual checkup, and they were like, well, you know, she kind of lost a little weight. And so, they said, you know, we'd like to do a, you know, like an ultrasound just to see what's going on. And so in order to do that, you know, to really get a good clear picture, you know, it's just like when we get a colonoscopy, you know, they want everything as clear as possible. So they said, you know, she should probably, you know, she needs to fast, you know, certainly from midnight. I mean, the procedure was going to go on at 9 or 10 in the morning. So they were like, you know, at least 10 to 12 hours. And so they said, so, you know, just around 11 o'clock or midnight, just, you know, take her food away, because we don't want her to be eating, because it, you know, it can affect what we're seeing. We want to get a clear view of all of her, you know, digestive systems and other, you know, organs and things like that. So it's like, okay. So that, you know, she's never really had to do that before. I can't even remember when she got her teeth pulled, if we had to do that. Maybe, but that was early on. And so, so it's like, okay. So thankfully around the night before the procedure, about 10 o'clock or so, she went down, you know, she went upstairs in her spot and she got her food and she came down. You can always tell when she's eating, she's kind of always licking her lips, kind of smacking. And it's like, okay, good. She, you know, 'cause she's a grazer. She doesn't really eat at one time. Like dogs are very, you know, they eat at maybe, you know, specific times. Cats, at least ours, have always been grazers. They'll go and they'll get hungry and they'll have a little and they'll come back and they'll come back later, and they might go back two or three times at one time. At least that's the way Grimsby is. She doesn't, it's not like she eats at, you know, 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. and you know, 8 o'clock at night. She's all over the board. And so, and like I said, she's always going in between. She's got her times, but you could see that, oh, she had a little something to eat, you know, in between, at certain times. And so, you know, so I was like, well, I'm glad that she had something to eat at 10 o'clock in the evening, because, you know, at 12, we're going to take her food away, and she's not going to be eating until who knows when, because she's going to go to the vet. They got to do this, you know, this procedure. They said it might take an hour or so, and then they probably would keep her there for a while, just, you know, afterwards. It was nothing intrusive. It was just an ultrasound, but still, you know, they had to shave her stomach and things like that. And they said that they might have to, you know, give her a light sedative, just because they have to move her around in different positions to get, you know, the stomach and the back and the sides with the x-rays and the ultrasounds. And so, so I was like, well, thank God she ate at 10. Well, so, you know, we go to sleep, you know, it's, you know, about 11 o'clock or so. And I actually fell asleep on the couch downstairs, and my wife went to bed. And so I was kind of sleeping, and all of a sudden around about 1 o'clock, I kind of woke up. I was kind of half sleeping, and I woke up and I saw her, and she had that look on her face like, hi, I'm here to eat. And I was like, oh boy, because usually, for all we know, I'm, once again, who knows? She must get out. She must get up in the middle of the night and have some little midnight snacks. She's a very small cat. She weighs about 9 pounds, maybe 10 pounds at the most. She's varied between 9 and 10 pounds. She's not a very big cat. She's always been very light, even from when we first got her. And she's kind of maintained that over the last 11 years. But she does eat. There's no question. You know, and so she must, you know, for, we're probably sleeping, you know, when we're sleeping in the middle of the night, who knows how many times she gets up for just a little snack. Maybe it's just two little bites, but that's kind of her routine. As I said, you know, cats especially are into routines. Well, we've taken her routine away. And I mean, we couldn't let her eat anything. You can't just put her by the bowl and let her take one bite and then take it away from her. We have to stick to this fasting thing for, you know, all night. Now we're going to, she's going to be gone, you know, it's going to be, but it's a good, by the time, you know, we had to leave, it was a good, going to be a good 7 hours. And if she's used to eating in the middle of the night, even though we don't know, she might stroll in there at 1 or at 3 or who knows when she might just wake up for a second and grab a little, you know, a couple of bites of something. So suddenly that food was gone. And she clearly knew it was gone. And so this is what I'm saying. So, you know, she came down around 1 o'clock. And I said, I fell asleep on the couch. My wife was upstairs. And she knows where to go for when she needs food. She knows who to go to. No question about that. And so she came downstairs. She, you know, she'll bug my wife, you know, as well. We're both sleeping. But most of the time she comes and bugs me. If it's in the middle of the night or something like that. And so so she came down. She must have seen I wasn't upstairs. So she came downstairs. She's not stupid. And, you know, she first kind of just stared. And I don't know if you ever had a cat, but I was kind of half awake. But you can tell when they're staring at you. She didn't say a word. I somewhat heard her walking down the stairs, but once again, I was half asleep, half not. And but as I sort of, you know, opened my eyes, I could feel. I had a sense that she was down there. I didn't hear her, but I could sense. And I looked, and I opened my eyes, and there she was, just staring at me. You know, I could see her outline. And I knew she was staring at me, and I was like, "Oh gosh, she's hungry. Now what do we do?" So I was somewhat anticipating this. And this is what my point is. So think about what we do. If you're a pet owner, think about what you do in order to, you know, please your pet. It's really hilarious. It's like there's no question, even though we are in charge. Right, I mean, you know, we brought these pets into our home, and we've set up rules and everything. But when you think about it, they really do run the house, right? I mean, I've gone to people's homes, and when they get a dog, suddenly the house looks completely different. There's dog beds, there's dog cages in rooms, there's little barriers or fences suddenly put up. It's like, who's running this place? There's no question. Yeah, we're in charge. Well, maybe, but probably not. You know, we buy the food. We make sure that the food is there, you know, in the cat's way, in a cat's life. We make sure the litter is there and the litter is cleaned. If you have a dog, you know that you take them out at 6 o'clock or at 7 a.m. and then you go at 3 in the afternoon or noon and you go out at 6. You know that there's this routine. You know that you train them so they go outside to go to the bathroom when they do something. You know that's that. But they're really setting the rules. You're not. You think you're in charge, but they really are in charge. And what we do to please them or to interact with them is really funny when you think about it. And here's a perfect example. So my only alternative here, I can't feed her, right? I cannot feed her. She cannot eat. So if I am awake, then she's going to keep bothering me, right? Because she's going to see like, hey, let's go. I'm hungry. Whenever I come by you and let you know, you always snap to attention and you get my food. So now there may be times when I'm completely asleep and she comes by, and maybe she, you know, she'll hit me with her paw, or she'll be in my face, or meow. But maybe I'm so sound asleep, I don't hear it. I don't know. I only know, of course, the times when I'm awake, or if she wakes me up. But I don't know how many on a regular basis. She may try to wake me up at night several times, and I might be completely, you know, in a deep sleep and don't react. So who knows? So this is what's so funny. So here I am now. I'm so worried about her. She can't eat, but I'm also worried. I don't want her to, if I'm awake, she's going to look at me like, well, what's your problem? Why aren't you feeding me? Why aren't you getting me food? You know that this is what I do when I'm hungry and I'm doing what I always do. And for some reason, you're not reacting here. And what's your problem? At least that's what I'm superimposing on her, what I'm thinking when I'm not jumping to get her the food. So while I'm asleep on the couch, I'm sort of half awake, and I see her staring. And I'm like, okay, look, I didn't move yet. I opened my eyes. I hadn't moved my body. And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to have to pretend that I'm sleeping. Now, this is, when you think about this in the grand scheme, it's hilarious, right? You should say, well, you know what, just don't feed the cat. And some of you who are not pet owners would just say, just don't feed the cat. But in my view, because of my affection for her, I'm trying to help her, but I don't want her to, you know, get like, well, what's your problem here? I don't know, you know, to upset her, what, I don't know what the word would be, but if I'm sleeping, then at least you know, she might understand that I'm not reacting, not because I don't want to, it's just because I'm asleep. And like I said, I may have done that many times. And she may be used to sometimes, I don't know, because I'm not awake. So my tactic here, my strategy was, okay, it's 1 o'clock. I mean, you know, we're going to leave for the vet at about 7:30. I mean, this is 6.5 hours. So I'm just going to pretend. Maybe if I pretend that I'm sleeping, she'll get the hint. I'm not moving. I'm not getting up. I'm sleeping. She might understand that. And maybe she'll just let this hunger pang, you know, kind of pass. And maybe she'll go to sleep and we'll be fine. So here I am pretending to be sleeping in front of this cat. And I'm thinking to myself, this is so hilarious. But I'm pretending to be sleeping. And so she's kind of like, okay, he's sleeping, but I'll do my little routine to wake him up. So first she starts to meow a few times, and she's walking around the coffee table by the couch where I'm at. And then she gets up on two legs on the couch where I'm at, and she's kind of right in my face, and I could feel her. I could hear her breathing. She's right in my face, but I don't want to open my eyes because then I'll let her know that I'm awake. And then if she knows I'm awake, then she's going to be expecting food. So I could hear her, and then she jumps down, and then she's meowing, and then she's sitting in the corner. I can, you know, it's dark, so I could open my eye a little and see where she's at. And then finally, after about 10 or 15 minutes, she sort of gives up. And once again, she jumped on the coffee table and kind of moved something on the coffee table. You know, all of her usual routines to get attention that she's hungry, she went through all of them. But I pretended to be asleep. And I was laughing to myself, saying, I'm actually pretending to be asleep for this cat. How funny is this? Well, it was funny until an hour later. So here she comes again. And she starts doing her routine. And so I sort of semi-wake up and I see, and I'm like, oh, I have to keep doing this. So now at like 2 o'clock, she left again after a while. I pretended to be asleep. And now I'm feeling kind of bad because I'm like, oh, geez, I know she's hungry. And now she's like, what the heck are you, what's the problem here? You know? And I'm trying to, I mean, at least that's what I'm assuming, right? Because she's hungry, so she's coming down. She knows where to get the food. I was still downstairs. I was like, okay, I was kind of tired. I'm like, let me just stay on the couch here. So she knew where I was, and she came down. And a lot of times I will go downstairs because I have weird sleeping habits and I'll watch TV for a while and then fall asleep and then go back. It's a whole thing. But she knows. She knows my sleeping habits too. So I would say it was about 4:30. And all of a sudden I hear meowing again. Oh, now she jumped up on the couch. And she's like right in my face, and I could hear her breathing. She must have been right next to my nose or my ears because I could hear her, like, you know, and she's meowing and she's meowing and she's running around. And I was like, oh. And so then she came back at 6 again, and I'm still pretending to be sleeping. And I'm just laughing at myself. At the same time, I'm feeling bad. And I'm like, I wish I could tell you why this is happening. I wish at 10 o'clock at night, I could have told you, now look, you're going to have an ultrasound tomorrow, and they want your stomach to be empty, and so you can't eat. So I know you're going to be hungry, but just so you know, you can't eat. Right now, as I said, if you've ever had any kind of procedures where you've had surgery or, as I said before, colonoscopies or something like that, any kind of procedure where they want you to not eat, you can have water and she could have water, but they don't want you to eat. And it's not just for surgery or colonoscopies or thing like that. There's a lot of different kind of things that is, you know, don't eat, or sometimes they even say don't drink unless you can just, if you have to take a pill, but you don't, you know, they don't even want water in you. Okay, but at least you know that you have to do that. You know why you have to do that. And so even though it's not pleasurable, at least you understand the circumstances and you accept them, even though they're not pleasurable, but you know they're temporary and it's just for this thing. And then no problem. So you put up with the break of routine, and you might be hungry for many hours or thirsty, but you put up with because you have to do it for this other reason. Well, you know, you can't explain that to a pet. Look, I'm trying to do this for your benefit. I know that you're hungry, but you don't know that tomorrow you're going for an ultrasound, and you don't know that the ultrasound needs to be, you need your, you know, your digestive system needs to be empty. There, you know, I could pet you on the head, Grimsby. I could pet you on the back. I could pet you in the scruff right between your neck there. I could scratch your back or right by your butt, by your tail. I could rub your stomach and all those things that we do. And that's kind of our little communication. But I can't relay to you the information as to why I can't feed you. And think about from her standpoint. She's like, okay, why isn't this working? You know, I've been here for 11 years, and every time I'm hungry, every day, this works. As I said, because we haven't really had to have a lot of situations where, you know, she's had to go through this. She's been very healthy. So it's like, what's going on? Why are you breaking the routine here? And it, I don't know, in her mind, and I don't know how deep she's thinking, but is she saying, well, so are you never going to feed me now? I mean, I don't know. Does she think that she's never going to get food again? I don't know. Hey, when I do these things, when I meow or I stare or I jump up on him or something like that, I move some objects on the coffee table, he understands that I'm hungry. I'm doing all those things, and for some reason now, he's not feeding me. Is he ever going to feed me again? I mean, is that what she's thinking? I don't know. It's not that illogical to think that she might. Now, once again, I'm applying human logic to an animal. We don't know exactly what she's thinking, but at least, as I said before, we will always kind of transpose our own feelings onto our pets, because there's that barrier that we, as much as we can create a relationship, there's still a communications barrier. They don't speak our language. And so, so I'm sitting there, you know, thinking to me, it was such a hilarious situation. Because first of all, I'm acting like I'm asleep for the cat, right? I mean, I'm trying not to hurt her feelings. I mean, that was, you know, that was my main thing was, well, if I pretend to be asleep, then she won't think that I'm ignoring her. It's just that I'm not awake. So there's a reason. You know, I guess, all your little meowings and movings around and things like that, they just didn't work, which is why she came back. Okay, they didn't work that time. I'm still hungry, so let me go back again. And she came back like 3 to 4 times. Yeah, 4 times. So then finally, and then I understand my wife said, oh, yeah, well, she was nudging me too. So she was double teaming us. She was clearly hungry. So she clearly eats during the night. There's no question about that. And for some reason, in her mind, why isn't there food there? You guys have been feeding me every day since I can remember for the last 11 years. And suddenly now, the food has stopped and I'm hungry. Now, could she get by without eating for a few hours? Certainly. But she doesn't know that she has to. And that was that. So not only was I play acting in front of the cat, pretending to be asleep so that I wouldn't either hurt her feelings or I don't even know what, I mean, it was more, maybe it was even more for me. Like, I don't want, I mean, if I get up, if I show that I'm awake, then she's going to be like, hey, let's go. And then if I don't, she's going to be like, well, you are really being a jerk here. So at least if I'm sleeping, she might be disappointed, but she doesn't think I'm a jerk. Because if I'm up and awake and walking around, then from her standpoint, what's the story? First of all, the food's not there, A. B, you're awake. This is our routine. This is what I do. So let's go upstairs and get the food. Let's put it back and give me some. So I'm play acting for my benefit, as well as hers. But then, as I said, what's so frustrating, especially like the third or fourth time, I was just like, oh my God, I just felt bad because I know she's hungry. I know she's like, hey, you're the food guy and you're not doing your thing here. And I was so frustrated. I was so tempted to just sort of, you know, wake up and pick her up or pet her, but that's not what she wanted. She wanted food. Oh, sure. She would have stayed in my arms for a while and let me pet her and say, okay, fine. You could do whatever you want to do affectionately. Doesn't mean I'm still not hungry. So, okay, I'll let you pet me. I'll let you hold me. I'll let you whatever. But when we're done, I'm running upstairs and you better be following me to feed me. So my only recourse was to pretend that I'm sleeping. Which I did, and I felt so bad, and I was like, oh my God, I would love to just be able to say, look, I would love to feed you, but it's for your own good. We need to do this procedure so we could find out, you know, what's going on. And so I'm doing this because I care and love you, but I know that you're going, hey, wake up, idiot. I'm hungry. And so it's so frustrating that as much as we can communicate with our pets and with our animals, there's ultimately that barrier. And even though there's ways that we can minimize that barrier to the point where it's a millimeter, there's still a barrier there, and that's where that comes from. And there's that uncertainty that when we change the routine, that that they don't know what's going on, and they are either scared or they're uncertain or they don't know. It's like, well, what's going on? And there's so many times, because Grimsby will just, like, every so often just stare at us. And it's like, what are you thinking right now? Talk to me. We so want, you know, because like I said, dogs will bark. So they will show, dogs are certainly much more, outwardly communicative in terms of what they want or how they're feeling. Cats are a different, a different animal. They just, there's a great mystery there in many ways. In some ways, there isn't a mystery. They're very straightforward and honest. It's the mystery is in our heads. They're like, hey, I'm not complicated. You're complicating me. I'm just being me, and you're trying to either understand me or trying to change me, and that's not going to happen. With a dog, as I said, you can train a dog, and they will react to you. That's a different temperament. It's a different everything. Cats have, once again, just a different makeup. And so what was so difficult about this, like, for instance, you know, I mean, we don't put her in a cage. I mean, you know, like I said, I guess we could have put her in a cage, you know, and so she wouldn't have got with no food in there, but I wouldn't want to do that. I was trying to make this as traumatic as possible. I never even thought about putting her in a cage, but my point is, I mean, we could have somehow, you know, put her in a room and close the door with no food. I'm sure she would have meowed and said, what's going on? And who knows what she would have done. So we wanted to make this as less traumatic as possible with this no food thing. But I thought it was so funny. So we didn't change much. So we just pretended to be sleeping. So, I was just thinking about, it's so crazy how we, if you're a pet owner, you know how you do things to either appease the cat or make them happy or acquiesce to what they want. And I'm saying, this cat lives with us, but in many ways, we live with Grimsby. We get her food. We feed her. We change her litter. We buy her litter. You know, she'll sit in certain places. We make, you know, she's found little places where she goes. We make these places comfortable. But we've created those for her. And so it's so funny how we think we're in charge. But you know that if you're a pet owner, they're in charge. But the best part is that you don't mind. You just don't mind because they do bring such an interesting aspect to your life. They are parts of your family. They are your companions. And it is a very unique relationship. And I'm so glad, as I said, when I was a kid, I didn't really have, I had a couple of birds, but birds are in cages. I never, and as I said before, Taffy and Tuffy the cat, I don't even know if the cat was even in the house. There's so little, I don't even know. But I'm so glad over the last, 35 years to have had these relationships with these two cats, because it really has been a very interesting and important part of my life. And I've appreciated the relationships that I've had with both of them. As I said before, very different in many ways, but also very much the same. Thames would do the same thing. She'd always come to me when she was hungry. So maybe that's my job. I don't know. But this was so funny. I was laughing to myself saying, I'm actually pretending to be asleep so that a cat won't get her feelings hurt. And that basically, when it's stripped down, that's what I was doing. I cared so much about how she would feel that I didn't want her to think that I was deliberately, ignoring her. I mean, I don't know if she knows what sleep is, but at least in my mind, I wasn't awake And so that was the reason why I wasn't, you know, responding to her food request. And I just found it just kind of funny to think of the lengths that we go for our pets. They really do add to our lives in many ways. And so I'm hoping that I don't need to do that again, because it was not something I looked forward to. But I'm sure there'll be another situation where I'll probably pretend to be doing something else just so that I won't hurt my feelings, that my cat's feelings. But does she have that? Does she care? Once again, I'm superimposing my own. Well, she's got to feel bad if I'm, for all I know, she's like, this is a guy that feeds me. I got to wake him up. And I'm going back down there until I wake him up. And the funny thing is that, hey, you know what? We got to a point, and then we got there, and she didn't eat. And we took her to the place, and she was fine, and she came home, and then she ate. For all I know, she forgot completely about the fasting. She forgot all about, I don't know what, you know, what kind of, you know, long-term memories, but for all I know, she doesn't even remember that that happened. But in the moment, she certainly did, because she was pulling all the stops. And here I was, pulling all my stops, pretending to be asleep so that she wouldn't think that I was ignoring her. Oh, my God. That's just one of the things that we do as pet owners, and I think we do it willingly. I know I do, and I just thought I would share this little funny little anecdote of I actually pretended to be asleep so I wouldn't hurt my cat's feelings. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 495. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Meow.